Hey, Savages. Welcome to the Savages and Scholars.
Podcast has started. How's everybody? Welcome to the Savages and Scholars. How's the quarantine for everybody?
It's going. I'm on week 3 or 4. I don't know. I lost count on how many days it's been. But yeah, we're here. Living.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
Me, I feel like I'm busier than ever. Because my whole family basically stays home, so I run all the errands, and then I do my essential job, and then and then somewhere in there I try to find time to work out, which I really haven't been doing. But today was like really the first day I did a workout ever since all this mess started. But so there's that.
That's good. And we're being joined by Jesse. Jesse is one of my favorite peeps, one of my spiritual brothers, and he's an aspiring, inspiring actor. Can you tell us, how's your quarantine been, Jesse?
It's been all right, actually. I live in Los Angeles, and so I came out to my family's house, and then the day I got here was the day that they kind of announced that, like, more of a stricter stay in place guideline. And so I had only planned on being here for like a week. But yeah, I'm just going to like keep on hunkering down. I'm at my family's house. There's no sense going back to the, I live in a little concrete house with like, there's 7 of us. And so I'm like, I'd rather just stay here, and wait it out. But it's been good. I've been, getting a lot of my own kind of like personal work in. One of my jobs has moved online, so I'm able to still kind of get income somewhat at a much like smaller level, and yeah, just been honestly doing a lot of online stuff. So in a weird way I'm feeling connected to people who I hadn't reached out to or talked to in a long time. So this is in a weird way been like a balance of like alone time and process time with community time. It's been good in that sense.
Oh, that's interesting. This is actually the first time that I've actually been able to sleep more often than my normal 4.5 to 5 hours. And I was noting that earlier today.
Oh, my.
So it's kind of crazy because I'm going to get used to it. And then what's going to happen then?
Right. I think I've been sleeping like a good 10, 11 hours a night. I could get used to it, but I have to go back to work eventually, and that's probably not going to work.
It's who you truly are whenever the carts are down, right?
I thought that it was just something that I used to do because I was like a teenager, and I didn't really have, you know, how teenagers sleep a lot, and then they don't really do much. Well, I'm still a teenager in my 30s.
So are you not going back to work? Since, like, because I remember last time you mentioned no, you took your vacation time. So have you not?
Yeah, I've already, this is like my third week being home, and I'm ready to go back to work on Monday because they changed things up a little bit. So I'm a little bit more comfortable going back. So I'm ready. I'm ready to go back out to the world. I'm not really doing much here because it's hard to find, for me right now, the motivation to do any kind of workout, like do like yoga is like the main example that I could probably just as easily do here. But it's just, it's tough whenever you're wanting to go outside and, you know, do stuff and you can't, and my motivation just leaves. Cause it just feels like I'm kind of like a hamster, you know, like on the little wheel, you know, just not going anywhere.
I have this thing where like I've been meditating a lot more in the morning, and I really like that. That's something that's good come out of this. Nobody has invented calculus yet? No? That's what happened with Isaac Newton.
Right, because he already invented it.
He hadn't already invented
it. Well, like, nobody needs to invent calculus anymore is what I'm saying.
No.
We don't need any more new maths either.
Okay.
I agree.
I'm done.
We can't have math. I mean, what you see how parents are over there complaining on Facebook about what, Common Core? I mean, world is killing it. The rest of, like, Europe and Japan are, like, you know, aces at math or whatever. And we're like, Common Core, that's not how we did it.
I love seeing, like, those Facebook posts where it will be, like, a math problem and you have to do the PEMDAS, like, step by step. And people are just, like, throwing out random numbers. I'm just looking at it like, what the fuck? Like, did we all, like, study the same thing? Like, did we all do math the right way? Because I don't know. Somehow, like, the numbers don't make sense.
PEMDAS, is that Please Excuse with My Dear Aunt Sally? Yeah.
Somebody found a better way, and we're over here like, what? So we can't handle another Isaac Newton. I'm convinced of that.
Oh, I mean, like, honestly, one of the things that I've dealt with math is, as I've gone up higher in math, it actually has gone easier. Mm-hmm. I remember being a very bad math person. And I think I've said this a couple times, but, like, I really do think, like, that made a big change in the fact that I'm able to at least not feel lost whenever I'm, like, in certain really complexes, like, more complex math than I would have given myself a couple years ago. And I feel like people can handle it. I feel like people can handle most of these, this like, higher math, but, you know, math people are just bad at selling themselves. And then everybody, you know, because of that thing is already out there where it's just like, oh, you know, math is hard, right? Then people just start like,
Math is hard.
Yeah, they just lean on that. They're like, well, I mean, math is hard. And then it's the thing that everybody's been telling you. As soon as you face a roadblock, of course, that's what you're going to go to. You're not the stupid one. Math is hard. Mm.
I was listening to this conservative being interviewed on a podcast today, I think it was, or yesterday, and he was saying in school you were either so his argument was that if you're conservative in school, you gravitated towards math because in school, if you either like math or you like the arts, one or the other. And if you like the arts, you're more of an emotional or a passionate person, and those people become what you would consider liberals or progressives or what have you. And then the people of reason, because of course he was a conservative, they tended to become conservatives, or because they were based on reason. Of course he didn't have a high opinion of liberals or Democrats, but that's just getting a little political.
Interesting.
Yeah, that stuff's super interesting to me, because I'll like Jordan Peterson has a kind of a breakdown as far as like the personality traits and then how those are divvied up between people biologically. Mm-hmm. And then how that's then reflected in politics, kind of like what you're saying. It's really fascinating. And then the idea is that like both these kind of mindset settings or personality dispositions are beneficial, like, evolutionarily, because it's like one is trying to maintain order and one is trying to maintain like expanding the bounds and creating from the newness, and you need both for a society to like thrive, because if you get one or the other, it's not healthy. And so I think that stuff's fascinating. Mm-hmm. You know?
Were you able to find what you were, like what you fall under? Like your personality types?
I don't know, because it's like I have like grown, I don't know if it's like nature or nurture, but like growing up I was super like as a child I was kind of wild and crazy and wanting to be an actor and do all that stuff, but then I like connected to my small town
sensibilities.
Yeah, that's it. And I kind of thought of myself as like, okay, I want to like I'm pretty smart, so let me like focus my attentions on like science or math or whatever. And I can be pretty orderly. Like I don't know. I'm a mix. I'm definitely a mix. But like so I'll say like for the longest time I shut down my emotions. Now this is kind of a disconnected thought, but I think they're related. But it's like I was so used to like shutting down emotions, because when I was younger, I was so passionate and expressive that I had to like learn to control myself. But then the pendulum swung and I like shut it down so much. And the idea of like, okay, I'm an athlete and I'm tough and I gotta like, you know, maybe a little bit of that like male culture idea of like, you know, staying all reserved. So then I lived that way for a long, long time. And, but then my kind of natural tendency started to come out, and that's what I wanted to gravitate towards, like theater and acting and language and the arts and stuff like that. But even once I started like doing those things externally and putting myself in those environments and going to school for it, I still had the mindset of like, oh, I'm kind of like trained as a scientist, and I'm trained to like analyze. And it took a long time for me to kind of merge the two to now in my acting. It's like, I love the kind of like left brain analytical parts of it, but I'm getting more and more used to the idea of like thinking of myself, like finally conceptualizing myself as an artist and allowing myself to express and feel the kind of like emotions that when they try to come out. And so I think I'm pretty high in openness, but I'm also pretty high in orderliness too, I think.
All right, so the four are openness, there's industriousness, right? And then there's five. Do you know them?
Yeah.
Okay, what are they?
Oh, is there six? From what I know, it's
the... No, he's lying. He don't listen to him.
No, the big five personality model is like an acronym called OCEAN. So it's like O for openness, C for conscientiousness, E for extroversion, A for agreeableness, and N for neuroticism. And then each of those will break down into two different parts. And you can like...
And then break down and then break down. And then
can
break
I be
down
to the you. OCEAN?
everybody has standard deviations of this, right? So like you don't just land in one. It's not like you're only one thing. You have all of them, except some come out more than the others.
Yeah.
So like while Jesse was talking about earlier, I was laughing because like I can imagine Jesse, you know, just trying to be as like, you know, orderly, doing his math on his whiteboard and then just singing. You know, just letting one out, right? You know, just Jesse's just picking up this, you know, cardboard box and it's just moving it somewhere else. And then just saying, well, Mary, I'm just going to take my things. In the most, just coming out, right? It's just coming out of you in whatever way that it would be.
You know, man, I tried to stifle it for too long and it couldn't stay in. I just have to sing sometimes.
You got to be you.
Yeah. I got to be me, man. I got to get on a stage and try to make people laugh, do some improv. It's an addictive compulsion I have that I am finally embracing, you know.
That actually reminds me of like, there's certain, you know, sentences that I'll say, you know, that have a connection to me, but I'll say them out loud and they don't make any sense. That's just a thing that I say when someone else says this, or whenever somebody triggers a word, then I say these things. And one of them is like, somehow the sentence is like, how'd you do it, right? There's always like that kind of question comes up a lot in mm-hmm. a whole bunch of different aspects. And somebody says, anytime that comes up, I'll be like, how'd you graduate so fast? That's like a line from Hamilton. That's just like, they ask him how he did it, how did he graduate so fast. Nobody knows anything about this. I have not explained this joke to anyone. I just say it. As soon as somebody says, how'd you do it? I'm like, how'd you graduate so fast? And it's just the artist part of me just coming out, I'm assuming.
Has anybody picked up on it and been like, Hamilton?
No.
Or they said like, it was my father's dying wish before he passed. None of that.
You would be the first one.
That would be great. But no, that has never happened. You're the first. And here's your box.
I feel like I should sing. When I get a soapbox, I don't preach, I sing.
So, Jess, can you like walk us through like how an interview with, or what would you call it, a casting call is? for, because you have to deal with those, right?
Yeah, yeah. So you talk about like going in for like an audition?
Mm-hmm. Audition, yes. That's what I was looking
for. Yeah, usually it'll be things are starting to move more towards self-tapes now, which is kind of good in a way, because it's like you can just set up your camera, you put it on your phone, you film yourself, you submit it, and then if they want you, they'll kind of narrow down kind of the people who they're thinking about, and then they'll send you an invite, and they'll invite you in. And so usually how that happens is you'll have what they call a sides, and it'll be like the scene, you know, like a couple page scene, and sometimes they'll have like one or two, usually one to two that they'll want you to prepare. Sometimes up to three or more, but usually it's about one or two sides, and it depends. Sometimes it's like at the drop of a hat, and then sometimes you'll know like a week ahead of time. And so if you have a week to work on it, that's awesome. But it might not be until like the day before that they call you in and they kind of coordinate with you when you're available during the times that they are. And then you'll come in and just, and then you'll come in and like, let's see, you'll kind of get there, you'll sign in, and then you'll be waiting around. You'll be kind of like eyeing everybody who looks like you. And it's just like, oh yeah.
We're seeing all your enemies, right? Just
yeah, yeah. You start sizing them up. You start thinking like, yeah, I'm better than this dude. Look at him. He's like, he's not
trying. Me, I got a better smile.
Yeah, yeah. Or you'll see them like, or sometimes you'll see them be like, oh man, he looks good, or you know, like whatever. And you start getting that battle in your head. I'll say that's how I used to be. I could care less. I'm getting to the experience level where I'm just like, you know what? It's just an audition, and go in there and do it. But yeah, yeah. So you'll tend to go in, you'll sign in, they'll call you in, and then typically they'll have a reader there with you, and they'll have the camera set up, and then you kind of read the scene right then and there. They'll also tend, here's the thing that they'll do, is they'll, if they want to just shuffle you out, sometimes they're just, you do it one time and you're gone and that's it. Sometimes they want to like see more from you, and they'll give you some little adjustments. They're like, hey, try doing it. And they'll change something about it. And typically they're doing that.
Right.
Huh?
As soon as they change something about it, they're like, all right, now do this as a goldfish. And then you're like, yeah. Yeah, yeah, of course.
If I get a note like that, I'm going to start really questioning these people. I'm going to be like, I don't know if I want to work with these folks. They don't.
Well, then you would have missed out on Shark Tale.
Lifetime.
Oh, my gosh.
Yo, I mean, actually, Jim Carrey did have a thing. He's like, sometimes you just have to rise above the BS and give a performance. And so I think that was some good advice. So if you get that goldfish line, give it all you got, brother. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like at some point, there's like the truest form is whenever you just do it, you know, whenever you just like, you're just told. And I've actually heard comedians talk about this more often, and it's not something that I thought about it before, but just giving into the character and then it's just kind of letting it flow. Mm-hmm. You know, you just kind of like allow the idea of not being like, I am playing this, instead just being like, this is what's happening. You know, you just allow, you're just being it.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually heard a lot of comedians lately talk about it, in particular Joe Rogan. So
what kind of like roles do you normally go for at the moment, Jesse?
It's kind of hard for me. I guess it's a blessing in a way. It's like I've been lucky enough to play a pretty wide range of stuff. Like I've played like the boy next door type, and then I've also played like a guy who had a girl locked in a shed and would beat her. You know, I've played like the kind of like best friend leading man type role. I've played like the rom-com guy, and then I've played like a pedophile. And so like I've been pretty varied in what I've been able to play, which is awesome. And so yeah, I'm kind of just at the point where I'm like, I'm gonna keep going through the doors that open up for me. I think I'm being intentional about trying to deepen my range, and so that's why I'm taking a lot of spending a lot of time with improv, because I used to be like, oh yeah, I want to be one of those like Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hardy, gritty HBO series type people. And I would still, I mean, clearly love to do something like that. But then I started realizing the schedule for people who can land a sitcom, and that schedule, it's a Monday through Friday job. Like, it's a good work-life balance. And so, and plus the skills of comedy like translate to anything you do. And so, yeah, I've been putting a lot of focus the last like 2.5-3 years into improv. And so my tastes are kind of shifting and I don't quite know where they're going to land.
You know? So you had a preference before, but now you've actually have expanded and are allowing to be anything. You know, you could just be any, like, of course, as you mentioned, there was a wide spectrum, right? Like, there's like a wide brush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Marie, I know that you were actually in arts before. Do you consider yourself more of an artist, or do you consider yourself more of an analytical person?
I'm definitely more of an artist, I guess, just by the fact that artists are more emotional under that branch. So just to kind of give you a backtrack of something that we've talked about before in the podcast, Jesse, is that I'm very interested in film. So it's really cool to see like someone that's actually working in the industry, like auditioning for, I don't know, maybe TV, movies, whatever you wanted to do, and doing improv, which is really cool too. But yeah, I would say I'm more artistic. If we put it in the sense of what Jesse does as an actor, I'm more of the background person, not in front of the camera. So like I'm more into production. I'm more into directing. I'm more into doing the nitty gritty stuff of like putting all this work together into one thing. So that's usually what I do. And what I like to do, I'm about to start going to school for that right now. So it's cool. Yeah. I have a question though, Jesse. Do you usually, audition for like TV or film, or are you just more like you're just kind of free range, like you just want to try everything to see what you end up liking and falling into it?
My background has been predominantly theater. Mm-hmm. that's why I went to school for that, and then the next 5 years after that I was spending a lot of time in Houston doing theater, and so that's where I kind of like was able to cut my chops. But even when I became a theater major, the goal was film. And so just at the end of 2019, I was in another play because an opportunity presented itself. But from here on out, I just want to focus predominantly on TV and film. At the tier of actor that I'm at right now, I'm not, I'm going out for like a lot of indie projects, and that's been most of my background as well. Like I've gone out for, like I landed like a little, what's it called, America's Most Wanted reenactment thing years ago, and like so I've done like a little bit that's made it to TV, but a lot of it's just been like indie projects, low budget stuff, that kind of thing. That's kind of where I'm at now, and so I'm just wanting to put forth all my effort into those and then, you know, keep building. But
dude, I love like, yeah, indie stuff. Indie stuff to me is like always like the stuff that really has to hit. Right, because as soon as some indie film hit like starts becoming normal, then you know like that's like a ringer. You know, that's how you get like a Reservoir Dogs, right? When there's something so crazy, obviously under budget, obviously like they had to like pull all the stops. It was just like straight up voice acting the entire way, except you get to see a little bit of people. You know, because there really wasn't much going on in most of Reservoir Dogs, but it was so like enthralling.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Do you do any singing in your roles?
I am a very hit or miss singer. Like I've landed like a couple of musicals, But I had the stretch when I was in Houston. So like I was interning at a theater, did a bunch of stuff there. After the internship ended, I was like taking classes, working my day jobs, and then auditioning and doing all that. And I ended up getting on this musical theater's radar, and I kept auditioning, and they'd always narrow it down between like me and one other guy for a role. And then during the final like musical audition between me and the other person, I would always choke under the pressure and lose like my sense of like connectiveness to my voice. And so like I remember hearing this note, like one of the producers got back to me like, man, Jesse's a good actor, I wish he could sing. And it was just like, because I couldn't do it. And and that stuck in me. And that was like, I'm gonna prove this guy wrong. So I ended up taking like a bunch of voice lessons, and like the next year finally landed a role. But it was at the same time I got this other part, and I went with the other part because it was like gonna pay more money and stuff. Yeah. And so I haven't done a musical in years, but so I don't know. But I wanna sing. I actually do wanna sing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've always wanted to write a movie, a musical. Actually, almost, you know how we were talking yesterday on the phone, and I was saying that if I had enough time, I would do everything. This is one of those things where like I would just come up with an idea for something. Not really anything in particular, but like I've always thought of making a rock opera, and then somebody did a rap opera. So I was just like, oh, these things are possible. You know, so like I can easily see, you know, like musicals being more popular in the future, I think.
I love musicals. I mean, like you got your cast right here. You know, you got Marie who can direct it for you, and then Jesse can sing, allegedly, he says.
Allegedly.
And then Frankie looks like he could be like a bad guy. Frankie, is your hair still long?
Jesse, have you done any movies in
2018? I did like this little Amazon. If anybody wants it, I did like a one-off episode on the show that made it to Amazon called Chunky Zeta. And then I did a bunch of like little indie, like a bunch of short films, and then like one project called oh my God, I'm going blank on it.
What a good name.
I'm Not Afraid. That's what it's called. I'm Not Afraid.
That's not you.
I was in that. Yeah, I was in that.
Cool.
Let me see. Go back.
You know,
he's the bad guy right there.
Oh, right? He has a gun.
Oh!
Oh, damn.
That's super cool.
Oh, what? What's going through your mind at this point, Jesse? You're pointing that gun at this woman who's obviously doesn't know what's better for herself because she's also smoking. So wait, before you tell us what happens, I want everybody to make a guess at what's happening in that one scene.
He owes somebody money, and Jesse's like, he wants to go rough her up for the money.
Oh, Jesse, you know, he's doing the... What's it called? Shark loaning work.
Yeah, shark loans.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Marie?
I was thinking the same thing Janet said, honestly.
Whoa.
It looks like he's going to go mob her for some money that she owes.
All right, so in the scene, what do you think, Frankie? I know you looked it up, so you
probably knows.
I think, no, I just looked up his... He tried to shoot a shot. He was with his buddies, and he was like, hey, man, hey, guys, I bet I can get the number. I bet I can get the phone number. He shot a shot, got turned down, so he gets the gun out. I mean, that's the only practical thing to do after that, right?
Yeah.
Logically. So bad.
Logically, that's what happens. Things escalate in that manner always. All right, so this is what I think is happening. And in that one scene, Jesse has just found out some truth that this woman who is looking away is had kept away from him. You know, how she was there in the summer of 1987. We were all there. She didn't say anything. And then he has to, you know, confront her because she was also part of the people who killed that one kid, but they all said they wouldn't say anything. But then now she's kind of looking like she might say something, and he didn't know that she was also a liability because she was looking. But he doesn't know how to deal with this girl, right? Because she's not one of his friends. She's just a girl that was there as well. So instead, he's just going to deal with it the easiest way possible by shooting her. That's what I think.
Did you watch it?
No.
Obviously not.
Do you guys want the big reveal?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
All right. So everybody except Miguel was pretty much right. We were playing cards. She swindled me. I was also spurned by her because she wasn't reciprocating my sexual advances. So I had to teach her a lesson.
What are the odds? Wow.
She taught me the lesson.
Not only was I a little wrong, I was extremely wrong.
It almost didn't make sense. Yay. Okay, yeah. So, I mean, she does look like she owes you money.
I mean, she's smoking a cigarette, looking away. How much more guilty can you look?
Yeah, cigarettes automatically make you look guilty.
Yeah, you could tell she was bad. She had a cigarette in her mouth.
See, that's why, like, I always think the cigarettes are like at least in film, they tend to resemble a moment in time whenever you need a little bit extra away from you, right? Some kind of, you know, whenever somebody pulls out a cigarette, it's never in triumphantly, right? It's always like you pull out a cigarette because like something, you just gotta get your nerve back. And, you know, some kind of, you know, I'm gonna go out to get a smoke.
I find it funny that like a female hero, you call her a heroine. Mm-hmm. I just think it's funny because that's drugs too.
I think that's on purpose. I think that's a part of the design. I actually think that the word heroine might have came after heroin.
I can't get over. I've never gotten over that. But
well, I mean, you can just avoid all that and just call her the hero of the story.
Or avoid all of it completely. Just call her a female actor and then just continue with the heroine.
Call her a human being, because that's what she is.
Call Jesse. Her by her name. How about that,
Jesse? So you trained in Houston. That's how you knew Miguel.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I first started training at Pablo Silva's gym in Houston. Met this gentleman and a scholar, and it was a beautiful friendship from there.
Do you still train in California, or do you find like everything you're doing is kind of taking up most of your time?
Well, I still train. However, like between like my last year or so in Houston, I was teaching middle school, and that really just, you're for anybody who's been a teacher, you know, your first year is just a whirlwind. And so I really slacked off training during that time. And then I moved to LA. And so I missed like a big chunk of time. And then I started training again out here back in February of 18. And I've been pretty consistent since then. Except for like, say this last, like during the play and my work and everything, but also now I'm at the point where I haven't been consistent in a good 6 months again. And so I'm hit or miss, but like it's every time I'm out of it, man, that itch just gnaws at me. And so like, yeah, as soon as all this clears up, man, I'm hopping back in. Like when I think about myself and the man I want to be, the person I want to be, like jiu-jitsu is just so vital to that journey. So yeah, I can't wait to get back in it. I'm definitely a lifer, and I can't wait to keep progressing again, you know. But I miss it right now because I've been out of it for a couple months.
Have you gotten a chance to do any tournaments or no?
Yeah, I did a tournament at the in January of 2019, and that's the last one I did.
How'd you do on that one?
I won my division. I got gold in that one.
Oh, sweet. I mean, it's not just doing a tournament. You went ahead and dunked it too, you know? So a whole bunch of people went to that tournament. That's you know, sometimes, and I'm not saying you do this, but like sometimes people will be like, they'll talk about their tournaments and their wins as like if they don't mean anything. And I look at Frankie right there. And like that to me hurts me, you know. So it means something to someone. It would have meant something to you that day had you not won, you know. So it's you know, you gotta take the responsibility of liking or of, you know, owning that part. I'm assuming
it's fair point, man. Yeah. Honestly, like I try to keep it low key, but I'm super proud because I was before that I had done a couple tournaments and I had never even won a match. And I would always kind of get that like performance anxiety thing. And I would find myself in situations where in training I knew what to do, but in the moment I'd be like, where does my hand go? You know, that kind of thing. And then this tournament, like to be able to like go out there, like I just wanted to win a match and to go out there and finally, like once that first match was out the way and I won, I was like, you know what? Today's a success. I faced my fears. I had some success in it. Awesome. Whatever happens, happens. And then I just kept progressing through the tournament and ended up winning that division. And man, I'm so proud. And so I'm like, on one sense, like, I am incredibly proud, but on the other sense, I'm like, I need to get back in there. That's been over a year. I can't be riding this high too much longer, you know?
Yeah, no, the only thing that like makes, you know, pales in comparison to your achievements is the ones that you're going to make.
Yes, sir. I love that. Yeah.
That's not mine. That's Ralph Waldo Emerson, my boy.
My boy. I should have known.
I wanted to ask you that because when you mentioned going to castings and walking into a room with your peers, that's what it seemed like going to a tournament and like sizing up your competition. You're looking at these guys like, is that the guy in my division? Is this the guy I'm facing? You know, it's just so cool, all the similarities in life.
Interestingly enough, every time that I've done that, it's always been more like, oh, that's definitely the guy. And then down and then see, he's the ultra heavyweight. he's obviously not in my division. It's just the guy. You know, the guy looks twice as big as Frankie, and I'm all like, I just can't wait to see you on the mats, bro. And I'm throwing all of my my juju at him.
No, see, that's part of why. Like jiu-jitsu is so the two things that I think are incredibly transformational for people is jiu-jitsu and improv, because I think they both exercise aspects of our personality that when those areas in our lives are trained up, we function better in the world. I really believe that. And jiu-jitsu, like I feel like it gives you that thing within yourself where you know you can look somebody straight in the eye and say no. You know what I mean? Like it gives you a different sense within yourself. And then that translates, you know what I mean? To whether your business goals, for me, my acting, like it for sure, it makes me feel rooted in myself in a way that I feel like I just function in the world so much better. And it's life-giving. Like it in and of itself is so life-giving. The community is wonderful. It trains your body. It sharpens your mind. It gives me a complete, it exercises that part of my brain that is more that like systematic structural thing. And it's a way to face fears in a way that only can build you up. And that's why I don't know. That's why it's a forever lifelong thing for me. Cause it's just such a beautiful medium to transform through, you know? And then I found a lot of those similar principles in improv, because improv, you jump in, you learn a structure to a degree, but you have to be flexible within the moment. And it's a cooperative thing. And it's a way that kind of helps you find your own comedic voice instead of just like playing, like a lot of people, at least where I train at UCB, and it's not so much character driven. And so it's helped me kind of settle into like, what is my comedic voice as a performer? And then that's only going to help translate to my career and help me. So those two avenues, I think, are the most transformational thing I can be putting my time into right now. You know? I love it. And so I recommend it to anybody. Like, if you want to, like, improv, it forces you into a situation where, by the very nature of it, you don't know what's going to happen. And so that part of your brain that is made for facing the unknown gets exercised there. And so to then pair that up with, like, the skill sets of jiu-jitsu, I think it's how I want to shape myself. That's my rant.
That's how you're doing it, right? So
yeah.
That's super crazy, dude, because, like, I think about, like, I remember doing improv myself, and I loved it. It was so fun. Oh, what? Frankie left. Oh, he's back. But, yeah, like, that was kind of one of those times where, like, you know, like, I think that doing improv kind of felt kind of easy on me. You know, usually there's a lot of things that take a long time for me to be able to jump into, but improv was one of them. And I do remember feeling a certain amount of times, like, where you're just kind of, like, searching, you know, like, I always think of, like, most of life or most of everybody's life to be, like, juggling stuff. And then, you know, you kind of get another one and you're like, whoa. And then you're doing it, and then you're like, all right, well, let me just try to get another one. And then it's just the one of them starts falling down. I'm like, no, I got to pick that one up. I feel like they have that kind of similarity where you have to juggle stuff, but you have, like, multiple dimensions of things going on, multiple dimensions of decisions that are going on. Have you seen Parasite?
No.
No? Okay, well.
You should watch it. That was great.
Yeah, I hear it's good.
It's actually pretty good. I've thought about that movie a lot lately. I have a very controversial opinion of it, and nobody has liked it. Nobody has liked my opinion about it.
Yeah.
I just feel like everybody else is wrong.
I mean, you're doing what you're supposed to do. Like, the purpose of that film is to make you think, and, like, you're still thinking about it weeks after watching it. So
right. I don't know. I definitely bit my knee.
Hey, but. Frankie, do you have 2.5 hours to spare to watch a movie?
I've been wanting to get around to watching it. I mean, because everybody says great things about it, I just haven't gotten around to it. But I'm definitely gonna watch it. Am I cutting out? Am I cutting out? No? Sorry.
No, you're good.
Okay.
You're saying no or yes?
Go ahead.
All right. Well.
Definitely. Y'all should definitely watch it, and then we can argue about it some more.
Definitely.
Yes.
I love arguing with Miguel.
I know. I love just arguing in general. Anytime somebody says something, I'm always like, well, what would make the opposite true? And not necessarily true, but I do that sometimes. At least whenever I say something, I try to think about, like, all of the angles in which whatever's being said could be construed to see if I'm missing anything.
I think that's a great stance in life, man, because there's so many people who just think surface level about things. It's weird because people will think surface level about issues, but then hold their opinion about that issue as part of their identity. And it's like, how are you? So then if you disagree with that, with their stance, they take it as a personal attack for something they hadn't even thought very much, very deeply about. And so, like, yeah, I think it's a great thing to, like, explore. We have to know what we believe and why we believe it, you know? And debate is such a great form of doing that, you know?
Also, it helps to debate with, like, the right people, because there are some people that you cannot have, you know, like, normal conversations with, that you cannot debate with, because there's just, because what they think, like you said, that's what they believe in, and if they're wrong, that means that their whole identity is wrong.
Ooh.
Right? So you can't even, like, even if you're not even attacking that person, even if you just question their, what they think or what they believe in, it's like you're attacking them at their core. And, you know, it's better to just offend people then, because you're going to do it anyway.
Whatever.
Right. Hey, I find myself in those situations and I'm like, a part of me wants to, like, press them because I know how fragile They are, and I'm like, their foundation needs to be shaken. You know, hopefully they'll rise from the ashes and construct their life a little better. And then the other part of me is like, just keep loving them as they are.
Yeah. That second part is something that I've been trying to do more of, because, like, how do I know, right? You know, if they're dealing with it the best way that they can, you know, like, if I'm asked for my opinion, I will say it, but then most of the time I'll be like, I will keep it to myself and then just tell my friends about it. Did you hear about Jessica? Well, if she listened to me, then she'd be so much better off. And, you know, Jessica is like an entrepreneur. You know, she sells jewelry. I'm like, I'm over here not selling jewelry. And what would I know? What would She's I know there. About the carats of a diamond? I didn't even know that they were different than the normal carats.
Oh, you're talking about Jessica?
No. Yeah, Jessica
okay. Karuna. Karuna? Is that how you say it?
Is that her last name?
No, it's Kurana.
Kurana.
That's alright.
Karuna.
Kahuna. And is she
so has Jeff,
all right, go ahead.
You're in California and you're on lockdown. Like, how bad is a California quarantine lockdown? Like, are they giving out tickets in the street or what? Or is it like a normal day almost?
Man, it's hard for me to say because, like, so I live in LA, but I've been out of LA for the last 3 weeks, which is the day I moved out is when it really ramped up. And so I don't know quite what's going on there other than what I see in the news. But yeah, I think it is at the point where they're starting to, like, you know, maybe give people tickets if they're at the beach and stuff like that. But from what I understand, you know, it's people are able to, like, leave their house to go to the stores and that kind of stuff. So it's like, you know, it's probably not too much too different from anywhere else, I'd imagine. And where I'm at is, like, so I'm in Victorville right now, which is it's a deserty, a total different vibe than LA. And so this feels just like, I don't know, like a small town hunker down, you know?
Yeah. I don't really like small towns. I don't know what I have against them. I'm always like, I just feel like small towns have this, like, this is the way we do things, and then this is the way that's always going to be, which I don't like. I feel like that's a, but I do feel like small communities are good. So, Janet has tried to convince me that small towns are more, what was it? More efficient? More right. Efficient at what?
Are getting done? Passing laws, making people listen to what they have to say. Yeah, I feel like whenever you're part of like a small town or a small community, you care more about what happens because these are the people that you see all the time that you're constantly interacting with. So I think it's easier to get together and come to an agreement and, like, pass laws that affect you and that benefit you a lot faster than, let's say, the city of Houston could, right? Like, it could take, I'm guessing, longer because, you know, there's like millions of people that live here compared to a town of like 10,000, 5,000, 2,000 people.
Where'd you read the study from?
Her name was Eleanor something, and she wrote a book that won a Pulitzer Prize, and it was about economics. It was about how it touched on the tragedy of the commons. I don't know if y'all ever heard about that little story. So it touched on the tragedy of the commons, and there's this thing that people have come up with. Well, I mean, it's true, right? Like, a lot of things belong to everybody, right? Like, the planet, no one can say that they own the planet. It belongs to all of us that live on it. The air that we breathe, the internet, there's a lot of things that are just, what is it called? Common property, right? And so she was talking about, how do we focus our attention on the things that people are taking more for themselves and leaving less for the rest of us? And the thing that she won the prize for was in her book, she wrote about how small communities have more of an impact. They can pass rules and regulations, and they can enforce those rules on people and they'll get stuff done, and, you know, they can change environmental laws and make them stick and it's basically just saying that everything starts, you know, from within the community, You know, you have to do a small scale for things to work, and mathematically it works.
Damn.
Boom.
And you still hate small communities?
I do. I hate the like nifty little things where they're like, hey, come look at our museum. And then you go there and it's like the weirdest guy's house. It's just like, well, this is a mirror. And I was like, yeah, I got one of those at home.
In a worst case scenario, the more, like, kind of what we're going through now, even though things don't really seem as bad as they could be, but like if things ever got bad where infrastructure fell apart, kind of, it seems like the more rural you are, the better chance you have. Like in the big cities, you know, when resources start to run out, it's gonna be it'll get ugly, you know. I mean, when water runs out, they can't get food to the supermarkets. It'll be tough. But like in small towns, rural areas, I mean, some people hunt for food. That's normal. Okay. Some people grow some of their food. Mm-hmm. So I can appreciate that respect. My dad, he's of elderly age, diabetic. So I would worry about what would happen to him in a situation like we're going through now. But he's in a very rural town in Mexico. Not a lot of people coming in and out of there. So I feel a little better. You know, they're kind of segregated from the big hustle and bustle of the city. Under normal circumstances, what
do you think that? Do you think like if shit went down and you're like, oh man, I'm worried about my dad, and then like you go to see your dad, and your dad's like, dude, I got this. You know, this is my kind of world. You know, because like if you talk to my dad, like he has like this, like he lived in a world where there was no electricity for a certain amount of time. My boy, you know, he lived in the mountains for like, he would do that on the weekends. He would just go to the mountains on the weekends, you know, just take the little shotgun, and it's just like, oh, this guy's got it. You know, here I am all worried about him, being like, how am I going to be able to, you know, take care of the family? And then my dad is over there already killing deer. And no, he had a butcher, which is also something interesting. He said, I am the son of a butcher.
Family of butchers.
Right? Yeah, it was a whole family of butchers. That's kind of cool.
That's crazy.
But yeah, it is. So in that rural area, is there anything you can grow, Jesse?
Oh no, I don't think so. It's pretty deserty. I mean, there's like grass and stuff, but no, this soil ain't much for the agriculture kind.
See, you're saying that with your city eyes.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Is there a body of water near you right now where you live?
I don't think so.
We're so connected to the city. It's like, I'm guilty of the same thing. It's like we're so dependent on the system that is a big city. We get our food, you know, from someplace else, and our water from some other place. We're so connected. Like some of us have this libertarian mindset, or we think we're libertarian or independent, or just want to be like left to our own vices. And then we live like in the middle of Houston. It's like, it's just not realistic. Some of the mentality people have, we're just all interconnected and dependent on each other. You know, unless you live like in some small mountain or something. I mean, yeah, we all really depend on each other a lot more than we like to think.
I agree. You know, this obviously this government thing that's happening, where there's a shutdown, but they're giving like $1,000 or whatever. And I know in a lot of places that's not a lot of money, but like just the fact that like that we were able to round up such a thing, you know, like, and particularly fast, honestly. I mean, if you think about like how much money that was to be like, all right, we're gonna do $1 trillion. Are you guys gonna pay us back in the future twice as much, or something of that sort? I don't know how you know, the government just made a deal with us and we're like, whatever, we'll do it. We don't know anything about that contract. We really have no idea. You know,
I haven't read it.
Yeah, I have no idea. They're like, hey, we're giving you $1,000. And I'm like, yay!
Where's my check?
You know, all you have to do is just be a citizen and don't worry about the small print. You know, we're good. What does this say about big companies? Don't worry about that, buddy. Here's your $1,000. You know what? You get $1,200 because you have a kid. And it's just something of that sort. But the fact that we do this, the fact that we were able to pull off $1 trillion or however much it was and actually give off to the rest of the United States, I think it's going to be world changing. I think that if anything, it proves a lot of things which people might have not wanted to say that, you know, might have not say out loud. You know, the fact that, you know, people who are pull yourself up by your bootstraps can't say that at this moment in time because it's no one's fault that this is happening. You know, it's such just something crazy that's happening to us. So I think this might actually be like the first steps of universal basic income or something of this sort, where you actually start seeing, you know, that it might be a possibility or it might actually be something that can happen for citizens of a certain place.
That along with the universal healthcare too, because of how many people are getting sick. I went to go visit my parents. So my dad just got out of like surgery, so he's been watching the news a lot, and it's like in Spanish, so it's like even scarier because like the music is like, it does make you feel like it's like chaos out there. And my dad was like, yeah, this is gonna be like the worst week for us. And I was like, what do you mean, what's gonna happen? Like, is the virus gonna mutate? It's like, no, it's just gonna be really bad. Like, there's gonna be a lot of people that are gonna get sick and that are gonna die. And I was like, who told you this? He's like, I've been watching it on the news. And he couldn't really give me a specific reason why. And we were just kind of like pegging him, like, where did you hear this? Like, I want to find out so I can yell at them.
Who is your source? I mean, you look at back in the time, Niurka Marcos. Is that her name?
I don't know.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's just like she's just there and she's saying it in a very tight dress and stuff. And you're like, of course, you know,
of course.
You look good. You look like you know what's been happening.
Very serious. Jorge Ramos.
Jorge Ramos, yeah.
He's been a Spanish like news anchor. Like my whole life, I think since I could remember, he's been on the news.
Jorge Ramos is the equivalent of Anderson Cooper.
Yes.
In English. And actually, they even look alike. I don't know who came first, but I'm sure that they've met each other's style before. They're like, I like that.
What was that, Frankie?
That was just a typical like header, you know, from Telemundo, Univision.
Show it again.
They just purposely try to just make it look as scary, you know, like they, yeah.
Oh, damn. Look.
Coronavirus.
Look at that. It even has like the
middle.
What sign is that, Janet? Do you know?
Huh?
What's that middle sign?
I can't see.
It's like the biohazard.
The biohazards.
Oh my God. They're so dramatic. I love Hispanic. I love culture, my community.
Hispanic culture, they're like a fun bunch. I like most of their stuff. They're I remember that my favorite culture at one point was Black people. Black culture is still probably one of my tops. But I definitely have leaned in a little bit more to my Hispanic culture. I think they have a lot to offer too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's just, and I'm saying that for myself. Obviously, not for everyone, especially Jesse. He can't say that because he's white.
Yeah. That's why I'm a strong individualist, because I don't know my culture. I'm just like,
yeah, you know, that is kind of fucked up that, oh, like, I can say I'm really proud to be Mexican, but if you heard someone say I'm proud to be white, you mm-hmm. just kind of look at them like, what?
Yeah, they can't say that. Unfortunately, it's just they have to lean on other stuff. So you'll see them being like, I'm proud to be Irish.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the thing with me. Like, have you guys seen those like 23andMe commercials?
Yeah.
And I remember like one of them, they had a guy and he's just like, I always thought my ancestors were German. Turns out we're Scottish. And now all of a sudden he's wearing kilts and stuff. I'm like, if you don't even know, it's not your culture. You know what I mean? Like, why am I going to think about some people from a different continent who lived generations ago and try to adopt that as giving me some sense of my, I don't know, in some sense of my ancestry.
Identity.
Yeah, like no, we are American people. Like, sure, there's like, you know, white, black, you know, gambit of like races, but kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, like, I think the whole point about being American, and it's hard for people to get out of their in-group biases. And there's something to be said of like embracing your culture, if that's your actual culture and you were raised with it and that's part of your life and your family. Mm-hmm. Sure. But I think like on a broader sense, the idea of like being an American is the idea of like the kind of like enlightenment values, individuality, the rights at the individual spread out through a healthy community, that kind of thing, instead of like, oh, government, take care of us, we're, you know, whatever. And so like it's a connected thing. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore.
This is saying your spiel so that you will get away from saying I'm proud to be white. This is
the thing with white people is they've mixed so many of us together. So it's like whenever the Irish came over, they were like trashy. And then they became like, oh, you're white people. Yeah, you're good. And then like the Italians were also coming over and just like, oh, the Italians are trash. It's like, oh, no, they're white people now too. Okay, you're good. And it's just like, so now if like a French person and an Italian person and a English person all have a kid, then it's still just a white person.
Yeah. There's a comedian called Tom Segura who's white passing, but he's actually from Argentina, I think. Like his mom is Hispanic, and in one of his comedy specials on Netflix, he's talking about like the sense of community that you described and how he had an experience where he was at the park, he was just walking, minding his business, and there was another guy, like another white guy just walking, who saw a group of, like a family of like black people, and he said the N-word to them, and then some other like black guy comes up, and he's like, oh no, he didn't, and then he went and like started beating up the guy, and Tom is like, get him! And then they like all turn to him, and he's like, I'm not with him, like,
yeah.
Like, I feel like that's exactly what you mean. Like, you're like, okay, they kind of threw me in this group, but like, we don't relate. Like, we don't relate in any way. Like, yeah. we're just the same skin tone, man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It just makes me a little bit sad, honestly, that's a thing though. And I think it's actually, eventually in the future, I don't think that race is even going to be a deal. I think it shouldn't. I think it really, anytime that somebody says anything about their race, I think it's a little bit of a cop-out. You know, you if you don't represent, like, what makes that thing it, right, is the individuals that do whatever it is that happens, right? So you'll think about, like, would you say that like a Greek person is a Greek person, but you would also say that Plato is a Greek person, and then you're like, well, obviously Plato resembles more of what Greece is, you know, or those times. I'm hoping I'm saying the right continent. I mean, the right area. I think it was, you know, one of the philosophers. But like, you know, it's just like, it's one of those things where like, you see that the person creates the environment rather than backwards, right? So you have like, obviously, an American, you know, like any kind of like deep American person. I'm trying to think of one. Obviously, I think Ralph Waldo Emerson is one of those deep American people. He was literally
a like, scholar.
Look into the past, right? He was just like, I don't want to see the eye, see the world through the eyes of my ancestors. Instead, you know, I feel like I hold the same amount of weight as they do. And I feel like a lot of like races, especially minorities, they can't really do that. And I think it's kind of like a little bit of a trap. But, you know, it's a little bit of both. It's a little dichotomy there.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jeff.
No, you can go ahead.
Okay. No, I mean, it comes to mind our national treasure, Neil deGrasse Tyson. He said, really, like, race is just kind of a human construct. Like, on a biological or DNA level, there's not really anything differentiating a Mexican from a white person or a Asian person or a black person. We're just humans. The fact that we haven't become one race, like Miguel says, is because of our own, just because we will it so, because we just think we're different. And so 50 years ago, we were like, well, whites shouldn't consort with blacks, and we'll even make it illegal. Or Mexicans will tell their daughters, no te juntes con ese gringo, okay? Juntate con uno de tu raza. You know, don't get with that white guy. Get with somebody from your own race. So our own, I guess culture can hold us back in that way. You know, like, culture is a beautiful thing, sure, but in another way, it holds us back, because the only thing that makes us different is that like Mexicans just happen to spend more time in the sun in the span of 200 years. Where Europeans, you know, tend to be from somewhere where it's more cloudy, so they don't have as much, melanin or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
But we're all just human. And ideally, we would have become one race already. But we're just so stuck on that, you know, U.S. versus China, whites versus blacks, Mexicans versus Hondurans. Like, just, we just look at each other like we're night and day when we're biologically the same thing. But Neil deGrasse Tyson is a great man, and he should be president. But go ahead, guys. Sorry.
No, I don't think so. I feel like I love Neil, but my boy has a. He needs.
I don't feel like you love Neil a lot at all. Okay, don't lie.
What happened?
I mean,
I don't feel like you love Neil at all. Don't lie to us.
Bro, I've watched every Neil deGrasse Tyson interview that I've been able to get my hands on. I like I like a lot of his stuff, but, you know, as a science popularizer, I feel like you kind of have to, like, sometimes you kind of, you know, fall prey to the becoming I think, you know, you kind of have like a certain expectation from you. So you kind of end up being that because that's what's being expected of you. And I don't like that aspect of him. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he's actually falling into that. I feel like he's like one of those people who's just like, I'm a science person. And it's just decides that this is the way that he sees the world. And it's just like, I was like, oh, I'm going to put on my scientist glasses. And then he would just start talking about whatever the case is. It's just like, you know how a scientist would see this? I'm like, yeah, how would a scientist see this, Neil? And he'd be like, actually, if you take a look at the curvature of the ball, you know, it just goes. And you know, like, you've seen any of his tweets, he does that. And I know a lot of the times that's just like bringing in a little bit of like, you know, science into these aspects, which I think are kind of cool. But I think a lot of times they're not necessary, you know, so. Or like they're missing the point. And I feel like usually whenever that comes up the most is whenever somebody challenges their view, which might be something that is not as scientific. don't know. So, I know I have my gripes against science as a person who does science. I feel like I can see the holes in it.
Miguel and I have this debate every other podcast where I just press ice is great. But anywho, sorry about that.
All right, so I want to actually ask each one of you as a closing idea, right? So, you know, take your time, but what do you guys think is actually going to come out, like, in terms of, like, we're in week 4, right, of this thing. Do you guys see the world changing yet? And if so, and if not, I've asked this at least 3 times, and I think every week it makes a difference, because, like, every week it's more than you thought, right? Every week you're like, oof. You know, we're all saying, like, we all know that it's supposed to be, like, somewhere in September where everything starts going back to normal, but every week it's just a step closer, and you're like, gotta be done by now. I thought that this thing would be done by now. I thought that I would, like, have already been able to start training again. You know, I thought that, like, and I've seen a lot of, like, you know, changes happening. And I feel like the changes are small, but they're happening. And it's like, it's gonna end up being like a big turn of the ship. Even towards a more united community, which is what I think. What do you think, Marie? Week 4.
Yeah. Week 4. I don't see it going back to the normal that we had. Like, where, you know, I mean, we're still going to be able to go to work at one point. We'll still, you know, reopen bars and clubs and restaurants. But I feel like that's going to take more time in itself. Like, in a more progressive type of sense than just, like, being like, all right, you guys are free to go. Like, everybody go reopen your small, like, your restaurants, your local businesses, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to be, like, very minimal, like, once we do go back. The date for that to start happening, though, I don't know, especially because the numbers keep going up and because we have big cities, like, you know, big cities and states such as New York City in New York being called the epicenter for the virus. And, you know, like, the government's getting prepared before actually having to be prepared. Like, they should have been prepared for this a few months ago, but at this point it's kind of like, how much more can you prepare for something like this, you know? So I don't know. I feel like we'll go back to normal with time. Like, it's going to take a while for us to go back to what we used to be doing as people, as citizens, as, like, you know, our everyday lives. So,
any changes throughout the decade? So you see anything, like, big in terms of either, like, good or bad?
Good might be, like, I don't know. I feel like technology is going to improve a lot, and it's already been improving. And that's weird to say, but since we have so many people, like, working from home and kids, like, going to school online, like, I feel like we're going to become better in that sense. Like, we're just going to keep developing in our technological skills, and we might have, like, maybe not a renaissance, like, after the Black Plague, but, like, we might have a lot of artistic and creative influences coming through from this point on to the end of the decade. In terms of bad, I don't know. We might still struggle with this virus. We might struggle with the variation of the virus. Who knows? I'm just trying to focus on the good, since it does stress me out a little bit. But, you know, I can't live my life with fear, so.
Yeah. How about you, Frankie? Week 4, you're coming in, you're seeing how the world is. How do you feel, like, about, you know, just the fact that we're doing this quarantine cast? You know, we're obviously all in a quarantine area. following the rules. How long can you follow the rules for? Or, you know, like, do you see any changes happening in the future?
I think in the future, I see two possibilities. And I feel like this first one is going to be a more likely one. So I think what's a given is that we have a growing world population, and we have poverty throughout the world. So as long as we have those two factors, I feel like this isn't the last time something like this will happen. Because through ignorance, people don't know that capturing wild animals will kind of, expose you to pathogens that you've never seen before, or variations of those pathogens. That's kind of what's happening. That still will be around, you know. So we'll just get over this, and then in 5-10 years, something else will happen, and we'll be right back at square one, unprepared and doing best we can with what we have. The other possibility is that we learn from this and we decide we need to invest more in our medical infrastructure because it's obviously not up to par with a pandemic type situation, which is becoming more and more likely. I mean, before this, it was SARS or pig flu or mad cow disease. So there's been more outbreaks happening, and they're not just from China, they're from other places, they're coming from different places. So we need to invest in our medical infrastructure, whatever. People have their opinions on universal healthcare, whatever you call it. I mean, I think that's just one step in a lot of steps we need to take.
Do you think that this is going to be one of those things like what happened in Japan after the bombings in Pearl Harbor, right? So after Japan and after World War II and Pearl Harbor, right? So we had Japan, which was maybe a fifth world country at the time. And I'm just joking. I don't know what kind of like country it was, but it was definitely not as ahead as it is now. The reason why it was able to get ahead, the reason why Japan was able to like begin anew and actually be so much more technologically driven and actually be technologically savvy is because of this crazy thing that happened to them that put them all down to zero. And then they were like, well, let's just rebuild. And then they didn't even build the stuff. They were able to jump, you know, past a lot of, you know, infrastructure that used to be there that people had to kind of depend on. But now they're, because of, you know, that crazy thing that happened to them, they didn't even need to build landlines. You know, they could just, like, I don't know if you guys know this, but a lot of third world countries, whenever they do the jump to a second or the first world country, what will end up happening is that they skip steps. They skip a lot of steps. And in the skipping of the steps, they get ahead. They actually get way more ahead, the same way as Japan, the same way as Singapore. Those are, you know, areas where like something really bad happened. And then they were like, all right, well, we're just going to go ahead and start from the drawing board. Do you see that happening?
No. I mean, for so many reasons. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I hate to be a pessimist, but I just don't see that happening. Like I said, there's so many holes in our infrastructure. The way we get our medicine, you know, it's like a lot of our raw materials are still like from countries that we don't even have a stable relationship with, like China. As big as this event seems, I just don't think it's big enough to cause that kind of shift that you're talking about. As crazy as that statement might sound.
I see. Okay.
Something bigger.
What about you, Jesse? Like, let me pose the question to you, because like in this type of situation, not only is the changes, in my opinion, are going to be like psychological, you will see, and this is a prediction of mine, all of these new movies that are going to come out, right? All of these new art and stuff, is going to be influenced by this thing. You know, this thing is definitely going to hit hard. And I bet you that horror movies in general are going to, you know, start, you know, pushing on the pandemic aspect. You know, I feel like same thing whenever, you know, we were having like the psychological shift between like horror movies in like the late, you know, things that used to scare people back in the day was things like Dracula, right? And then, you know, like the monsters. But as society has grown, especially like in America, the things that kind of scare you, like Americans in general, are like, you know, group stuff. You see a lot of things like what was the name of that movie that like they basically the play was it no not the play the one where they can do anything for one day,
the purge.
Right, so that's like a new fear that has come up, right? So that you see that type of idea, and a lot of the purge idea is just like, what happens if the infrastructure breaks? We're all depending on it. You know, would you hold yourself back if you didn't have to? You know, those are the kind of things that are happening in that situation, right? And that's the kind of mentality that humanity was at that time. Now we have had something crazy happen within our general time span, you know, while we're alive, and we're definitely going to see some repercussions in the future, in particular in art. Do you see any of that?
Yeah, I think it's a twofold thing. I agree with Marie that I think in a way there's going to be a renaissance of sorts with people's creativity. I think where we're seeing that now, you know, when we see that when people are under strain, that beauty tends to come from that. And so I think at the individual level, that's going to happen. I think it's a twofold thing where, kind of like what Marie also talked about earlier, where we can see that smaller communities taking ownership of their own leads to more efficiency. And so I think this time is going to cause the individual to go within themselves, evaluate what's important to them, how they want to spend their life. And I think as individuals, we're going to emerge from this time with a new sense of like purpose and camaraderie and a willingness to come together in our small communities, which I think could be really, really wonderful and great. On a global scale, what is going to happen, and I think this is also seen throughout history, is whenever there's big shifts on the world stage, the powers that be tend to take that as license, often with the public's approval, to take more control of a situation. So that could be good, that could be bad. I think that there could be, because we are, it is at the individual level, it is at the small community level, but we can't deny that we are interconnected on a broader scale. And I think at the broader scale level, there could be some good things that could come from that. But I'm hesitant because I think that the heart of human beings tends to shift towards power grabs and then not relinquishing that power grab once they have it. And so I think that there's a danger for more controlling legislation to be put in place at the country level. And I think that the global powers will try to enact some more controlling bodies to, which on the surface seem to be nice and good, but I would question and be hesitant about the long-term effect of that happening. But, you know, it's hard to say. I just think that there's a lot of danger and things to be hesitant about, but I also think that there is the potential for people's individual and collective communal sense to grow, and people taking more ownership of themselves and their communities, which could be a really beautiful thing. I don't know.
What about you, Janet? Do you see any changes in particular? I don't know. Do you think that biology or anything like that would change in the aspects of what's happening? Do you see any climate information?
I know that especially right now, that people are looking towards the people that are working in like the labs, the people that are making the vaccines. There's going to be a lot of focus on biotechnology. Santa Maria mentioned technology, you know, just kind of trying to figure out ways where we can make, you know, healthcare testing more efficient, you know, like coming up with vaccines. I know that it's not easy, but I think that that's what biotechnology focuses on, is how do we use this technology to our advantage and help, you know, humanity when it comes to things like viruses and bacteria, cancers, and you don't ever know what's going to be like the next big thing. So I think definitely like the sciences and the technologies that we have are going to have, they're going to have to advance. Like, we don't have an option. We were not prepared for this at all. Like, it caught us, you know, it blindsided us. So I think that there is definitely going to be more money and more shift, the focus being shifted on this, on scientists, on biology, on people that, you know, that are working for the health field, people that are testing. But I really, it's hard to tell what's going to happen. I see both sides of the coin, where people are really, really afraid. And then there's people that are just living about, like, you know, their normal lives. They're just not hanging out outside of their house. They're just going to work, buying groceries, coming home. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to tell. I don't know. I don't know if things are ever going to be the way that they used to be.
Oh, but the things were never, they used to be the way that they were.
Something's going to happen. I mean, people are dying, you know, this thing is like, I understand why people are afraid, you know, it's kind of scary whenever you're watching the news in Spanish and the death toll just keeps rising. And you're just like, as like an individual, you can't do anything except, you know, just do your part, not spread it. You know, if you're sick, stay home.
This is like that moment in like Rosemary's Baby, right? You know, whenever she's like, oh my God, this is actually real. You know what I'm talking about? What did you say? This is really happening, right? She's something like, all of these outrageous stuff starts happening. She thinks that she's like induced, right? She's like in a sleepy, she thinks that she's having some kind of a dream, right? Yeah. And then, you know, whenever she's like, nope, not a dream. This is actually happening.
It's the real deal. Yes, kind of like that.
Yeah. So going on to week four, and I really think that the arts are going to, you know, really, we're going to be able to see a lot of like the arts flourish. I do think that that's going to happen. I think that there's going to be, like Jesse was mentioning, like a communal sense. Like, this is where you actually start noticing the people around you are the people who actually matter. You know, they're the people that you can be afraid of, or they're the people that you can rely on. So, like, those are the kind of things that, you know, you see. I know that, like, during the hurricanes, you know, my dad, you know, I was kind of still, like, I think I might have been, like, 17 or 18 whenever Ike hit. I'm not 100% sure how old I was, but like, I was old enough to recognize the situation, the severity of the situation, but not old enough to deal with it on my own, right? So like I was with my parents, and I noticed that there was like a sense of community. Like, people definitely wanted to help each other out. You know, we got power first, and then my dad was actually, he lent power, you know, to the people right in front of us. You know, they just grabbed the cord, which is, you know, taking power from our house. In the first couple of weeks, you know, like the first couple of days, there was no power on both of the houses, and we were both in the same area. And then, you know, we went and bought a generator, and there was people gouging generators at that time, which, I mean, like, as bad as that may seem, the guy wanted to make an opportunity. So I see that being as an opportunity as well. You know, so like, I cannot bar him from, you know, seeing this type of thing. And it's just like a weird sense where, like, you know, the people around you are what matters the most whenever all the chips are down, because, you know, reality is not on the phone. Reality is not on TV. You know, reality is right here. And like, that's how you notice it more. I think that it, like, this is definitely gonna be a shift in technology too. Like, for sure, in the future, we're gonna pay more attention to these type of things, you know, like, for sure. I mean, just imagine what happened after 9/11, and then how much more tight the attention, like, a lot of times people say that's like theater, right? That's like, you know, airport theater, but still something that we did out of, you know, to try to, you know, break that part down. I'm not sure how much, you know, how much that actually happened before, but for sure you feel a little bit safer knowing that that's happening. And I feel like that might actually happen again. Just in general, I think that things might actually turn in a good way. This is a good opportunity for a lot of people. And I think that we should take it as such. You know, it's in hard times, it's whenever, like, you know, heroes rise. That's the only time when they do, right? At no other point in time does that actually even happen. You know, this is, you know, we were going to be the middle child of history for a really long time, you know, between, you know, between my birth year and all the way until, like, 2000, because 2001 the iPhone came out. No, 2001 was DVD. 2007 iPhone came out, right? So before then, all the way to 2007, you know, like, or all the way to 2001, because that's whenever 9/11 happened, right? Those are, like, my life, you know, if I would have been born and died during that time in the 90s, it would have been kind of like, you know, just a little, if you're thinking of the timeline, it's just going straight. Then, you know, 9/11 happens, and then, you know, the timeline moves up, and then now in our time in history, that makes more sense. Same thing as time is passing by. You know, people wouldn't have remembered the times in between the 1800s and now, right? So there's, like, a certain amount of time where people don't really care about. In those years, we were going to be one of those, except now we're not. Now we have our own version of that. We have our own version of like, the baby boom, which I think is going to happen after this. Anyways. And that's what I think. That's my rant. Guys, it was so cool. Does anybody have anything else to add before we close off?
I hope you're right. I hope something good does happen from this. If not in a, at a large scale, a small scale will do.
Well, it starts with you, right?
Yeah, I think as long as we're committed to growing in health ourselves and then being forces for love in the world, then we're doing everything we can. And that leads to good things.
Okay, cool. What, anybody else have anything to add?
I feel like I can definitely agree with you on the whole baby boomer type of thing. Like, there's just gonna be, like, a bunch of babies after this quarantine. Like, I already know.
So funny, like the Generation Z is really making fun of boomers. They're the ones that came up with that word, but now they're gonna be the boomers. They're gonna be the ones benefiting from, like, this super crazy thing that happened to them in history. So that's just ironic beauty, you know. It's just a life.
They're gonna be boomers.
Yeah. Anyways, Jesse, thank you for joining the Savages and Scholars. How can we reach you if we wanted to?
Oh, man, y'all, this was such a pleasure. So I'm on Instagram at @the_Jesse_Dean. That's J-E-S-S-E. And, yeah, you can hit me up there. Also, if you wanted to hit me up on Facebook, I'm on there too, Jesse Merrill. And, yeah, that's...
You're going to find that movie where you're being slighted.
I don't know what happened to that movie. They I remember it showed at, like, this, they had, like, a whole theater debut thing, and I went and watched it, and then I never heard a thing about, like, release dates and nothing. I have no clue. To me, it's gone forever. I don't know.
Wow.
You can check my IMDb page and check out all my sections, but I'm Jesse Merrill too, because apparently back in 2004, this guy named Jesse Merrill did, like, one or two things, and he got the jump on me. So Jesse Merrill 2 on IMDb.
You're the Jesse Merrill. That's it. Jesse Dean.
Oh, but guys, y'all, this is amazing. I love what y'all are doing. Meaningful, thoughtful conversations. Good folks. I love it.
All right.
So thank you
so much. And thank you for joining us, Advocates and Scholars. Bam, we're done.
Shut it down. Turn it off.
That's all I need.
Hey, your host here. Thank you for listening to the show, The Savages and Scholars. If you enjoyed the podcast, there's a couple of ways that you can help. One of them is by leaving a review. The other one is by telling your friends. It doesn't really matter where you leave a review or who you tell, as long as you actually do an action towards helping us out. It would really help us out. It really does. Reviews help show other people who don't know the podcast about it, and telling your friends is probably the best way to get to know a new thing. Also, if you enjoy us, please look us up on Savage Scholars on Instagram. It's actually Savage Scholars. Hope to see you there. Bye. Love you.